Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's broadcast of the Alchemy of Light show. This show is a celebration and exploration of consciousness. And today we have an extraordinary guest with so many ways that he could share with us about consciousness. It will be fascinating to see where this show goes. Please join me in welcoming Aaron McCollum. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's an absolute honor to share this time with you. Your story is so special because you cross all the lines that harden all of our belief systems. Your story as a dolphin-human hybrid, as being body cultivated, as being a prodigal. Product of an extraordinary piece of equipment on one level for the government projects, then breaking free, choosing the integrity of your soul, and rising in your consciousness to the call of justice. Your story is so rich. So I would like to please just welcome you to introduce yourself and let the listeners know in your words, how would you describe your story at this moment?
Excuse me. That's a long story, and we only have an hour, so I guess
Okay.
just basically, I mean, if people want to hear my full story, I mean, I've got quite a few interviews out there, but for those who are just tuning in now that may never have heard of me, I was raised from practically birth to be in a several special projects. Within the military, call them black ops, call them above top secret. It's pretty much the same thing. And as a child, I was raised learning all kinds of things and subjected to a number of things, such as cold water submersion, sensory deprivation chambers, psychotropic drugs, experimental, and well, I should say, surgical procedures that I have not yet been able to explain yet would be a better way to describe it. And of course, when I was very young, going through a ritual, you could say, of certain things and learning hand-to-hand combat, weapons handling, survival, being tuned up for what would later become the work that I was raised to do. And that in itself is a whole nother story of some of the experiences that I remember and things that occurred. But it all really, the catalyst for everything was when I was taken to a facility when I was 3 years old by one of my grandmothers. And I was taken to a facility that had this pool. And somehow I was subdued, I was incapacitated, put into the pool. And the only thing I remember after that is laying on a table, cold, wet, coughing up, hacking up water, being quite scared, and these people standing over me saying something to the effect of, "That's the one," or "He fits," or, you know, "Good job." I don't know what exactly he said because this is a very early memory, but whatever I had done was it met their approval, and that began what seemed like a lifetime of training and subjected to all kinds of unusual things. Even at one point when I was 5, waking up during a very unusual procedure where I was laying at on a table and had doctors over me and they were doing something with my knee. And I haven't been able to get any answers directly from that one. But then we'll just fast forward real quick because I'm trying to be brief. When I was 16, I was contacted to meet with some gentleman at a place in Vancouver, Washington. I went there on my own, went into what appeared to be a military recruiting station. It indeed was, but I went to the back of the place, not front, where there were regular people there trying to sign up for the military. I went to a back room and met with some individuals where I was told, not recruited, I was told that in 2 years from then I would be joining the military, specifically the United States Coast Guard, because based on my entire dossier and training, that would best suit so that I would be integrated properly for doing the real operations I was a part of. Because, see, when I was in the military, there were two sides of my job. There was the regular Aaron McCollum, who did his law enforcement, counterterrorism, search and rescue, things like that. But then there was the other side that was doing another side of military operations, above top secret operations, with through eventually Project Seagate, but beginning with Operation Paperclip, or no, excuse me, Operation Paperclip, excuse me, Operation Spyglass. Operation Paperclip was another operation that was long before I was born. Operation Spyglass, which is the global military abduction operation that is operated by the United States Black Operations. And then I did that for about 10 years. Something occurred, which we can get into later. And I was burned, blacklisted, found myself at the Portland, Oregon International Airport with just two bags, not remembering anything. And then going on from there for a couple of years with some more stuff going on and pretty much living off the grid for about 2 years in the southwestern desert of the United States. And then finding myself in Los Angeles, where I was approached by a gentleman with Naval Intelligence. He was actually a Marine, U.S. Marine officer, where I was involuntarily recalled back to service, where I worked with a clandestine group for that was from about June of 2008 until the end of February of 2009. So it was a short period, but again, there was another reason why that was. And then finally deciding to initially seek revenge upon those, which was actually my first motive and was why I first went public. But of course, as things transformed within myself, that motive became something much more on the light side of things. And now here I am talking with you.
Well, I wonder if you want to share with us your turning point, as there are many. I'm curious, there are two that I saw in your story you just shared in brief. There was the place of turning in where you were burned, and something shifted in your consciousness from the way you had always thought in sauce, and then the shift in your consciousness when you turned from revenge to service. And I wonder if you can share with us how those moments were pivotal and how you experienced those in the light of the obvious challenge of finding yourself in that process at the same time.
Well, to explain that, there was actually three separate incidences over a span of several years that took place. The first two incidences that occurred, because someone like me, who is raised and trained in a way, really, you could say, groomed. I was groomed in a way to where the only things I needed to know was how to survive, how to complete the objective, and how to deal with that. And of course, how to deal with that was just taking away the emotion. And of course, within that equation was creating altars, which happens at a very young age with people that are in my situation, anywhere between the ages of 5 and 8. That's where they really get down into that. So
can you explain just briefly what creating an altar is for the listeners who might not understand that?
Creating an altar is nothing more than an alternate personality. It is basically through synthetic means creating a person, giving them multiple personalities. Now, of course, there are people who are born who, unfortunately, because of all the toxins and other reasons, are born with multiple personality disorder. This can actually be corrected, but of course, modern science suppresses that for big pharma. That's a whole nother story. So what they do is basically you take an innocent, untainted child, boy or girl, doesn't matter. It's the same process. And then you subject them to what is, bottom line, is torture, such as electroshock therapy, introducing certain frequencies, projected imaging. It's basically you have them in front of a projector or a TV, and they are forced to see some pretty brutal things. This is, causes the desensitizing, the cold water submersion, the sensory deprivation chambers, and there's much, much more. Isolation, sleep deprivation. When you put them on a regimen, and we're not talking like, you know, an hour of cold water submersion and then they get to go play. No, the child is subjected to this for days, weeks, months, sometimes years on a continuous regimen. What happens is that eventually the mind, the psyche, gets to a point where you have two options because of the amount of stress, the actual pain, physical and psychological stress happens on the body. Your body and your mind have two choices. One, you can die from, literally from shock, from the pain and the stress, or your mind, and of course they kind of help along with certain drugs and other technology that they have, where they will not allow your body to die so that your mind actually splits. So what happens is basically now your mind is two different alters. You have the one that is your always the frontal lobe, the conscious alter, and then you have the other ones that are kind of tucked away. Once that happens, then the scientists, the doctors, the as we call them, the operators, are able to groom that new alter into whatever. This is kind of similar to the Manchurian Candidate effect, but it's not the same. The super soldier projects are not Manchurian candidates because Manchurian candidates are sacrificial lambs. They invest way too much money into us to have us be a one-time use. So then through implants, certain trigger words, frequencies, they can then trigger that alter or alters, because most of us have multiple alters, so that they can trigger you so that when you go on a mission, there are things that you don't necessarily know or are able to do as the person I'm talking to now, but they trigger me an alter, and then I can go on a mission. This is the ultimate form of keeping secrecy, because what one alter does, the other alter isn't aware of. So when I come back to being Aaron McCollum, I don't have any idea what I did in another country or elsewhere. And so that's the basic process of what it means to have alters.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I guess just to talk about these three. Okay. So with that explained, which hopefully will paint a clearer picture, I had three encounters, three interventions. And because of over 2 decades of being, I was almost 30 years at that point of being groomed and basically being a machine. Because, see, I saw humans as nothing more than cattle, that if they blinked at me the wrong way, I wouldn't hesitate to kill them and brush it off. Complete lack of emotion. Mm. Complete. Not even hate. Just complete lack of anything. Because even hate can be transformed into something positive. They didn't want to pose that risk. So the first incident is something that I don't really talk about much because I'm still trying to really find the answers. But in the first situation, I did something that later I talked to two people who are no longer on the grid, so I'm not able to speak with them, shared this incident where I was having some very unusual memories. It's a long story. I'm going to try to keep it brief, but let's just paraphrase it, and then maybe we can go into this specific story on another show if you want. I did something that's known as an unauthorized jump. At the facility I was at, Project Seagate, otherwise known as Pro-C, which is a facility off the coast of Puerto Rico, at a below seafloor facility, I was part of a project that did a tele. it was basically teleportation. It was the item itself, the mechanism was known as the Seagate. It was, in a way itself, similar technology to a Stargate, but the medium that was used was water. Water had a very much a significance. What, basically, in the pool where it was at, where we had submerged, if you took the water out, this would not work. It did not work. Now, of course, I wasn't one of the operators or the white coats, so I was just the guy who got the gear, got the team gut, went in, followed the directive, came back. But I had rounded up some people because of the authorization and the ranking I had, and this much I can't explain. I was almost an autopilot, and I jumped somewhere. I do know now where I went, but I don't talk about much, not because I'm trying to keep secrets or anything. It's just that there are still many questions that I'm trying to hold, not hold, but figure out.
Right.
But I will tell you who I did go see, and many people may think, oh, this just sounds crazy, and that's fine, because I know deep within my gut and my heart, and based on things that happened later on, what I did, I went and saw some people that I now call my friends. People, I use that term lightly, Arcturians.
Mm.
But to say the word Arcturian still is kind of funny for me, because that's would be kind of like calling everyone from Earth. If you lived another planet, you call people from Earth just Earthlings instead of calling someone, you know, I don't know, Mexican or Caucasian or whatever. Arcturian is just the word that is best for us to use, because their language is based on frequency and colors, and it's kind of complicated. When I get information from them, when I've gotten information from them in the past, it's not exactly exchange of words. So
this is an extraterrestrial community?
Yes. Okay. So when I was there, a lot occurred in a very, very short time, but something was downloaded into me that I was told I wouldn't be ready to understand yet. However, when I returned back, when I jumped back, and again, I had no idea, but I'd never even heard of these beings. I had no idea. I mean, I worked alongside and had witnessed some off-planet beings because of the work I was doing, but this was completely foreign to me. So when I got back from that point, which I can only roughly estimate was in the mid-summer of 2005, the next memory I have is December 21st of 2005, when I found myself at the Portland, Oregon airport. So what I later learned on was that was an intervention in a way. You could say planting the seed, but I completely ignored it, just blew it off. Because I, at that point, I had more important current things to work on, like who the hell was I? Where the heck am I from? What am I doing in this place? Why am I wearing short sandals and a t-shirt? And there's 2 feet of snow on the ground, you know? These were questions I had to ask.
And you were feeling something then? Was this a place where you started to actually feel again?
No,
not
that,
yet. Okay.
That road was that's a long road. I'll tell you what happened just real briefly. I was able to, I can only say some unusual circumstances, reunited with part of my family who actually resides in that area of Oregon. And so I went and lived with them for a while. And of course, this was kind of awkward itself, because they knew me. They were talking about things when I was a kid, and I had no idea what they were talking about, but I had to play along. So the basic instincts of me were kicking in, and that was just survival. Roof over the head, food, you know, not being on. But after only about 3 months, I couldn't take it. I was having some really weird dreams, visions, flashbacks, whatever you want to call them. And then I find myself going to a car that I had acquired, and I get in the car, and about 26 hours later, I find myself in Phoenix, Arizona, on the side of a street with no car. So here I am in Phoenix, Arizona now, and I don't remember the last 26 hours. At this point, I was having a lot of missing time. So this was where I spent the next 2 years, just pretty much living off the grid. I was just making ends meet here and there by being hired muscle, doing things that there's no way in heck I would do now. It was a very dark, dark part of this new life I have. And I kind of consider my new life, you know, since December 21st, 2005. In the later part of 2006, I had completely had enough. So this was still in that roughly two year amount of time. And I had done a job for this lady, and she was letting me stay at her house. And she lived in this big gated community, like one of those gated neighborhoods where you got to actually have a security code just to get through the front road. No one knew where I lived. I didn't own a cell phone. I wasn't online, nothing. But I had had enough, and she had a big medicine cabinet. I'd made myself a cocktail. I had had it. So I was going to terminate myself, and it failed. What happened was I woke up in a hospital in Phoenix the next morning, detoxing from the drugs, and I'd asked the doctor, and I remember being mad. I was mad because I was still alive. The doctor basically told me I'd taken enough drugs that should have killed an elephant, and he had no idea how I was still alive. And then I asked him how I got here, and he said, well, that's a strange story. The story goes from the doctor, a nurse, and the receptionist is that a very tall, very quiet man was carrying me, and I'm not a small guy. I'm pushing 200 pounds, 6'2", was carrying me and some garbage bags that had what little clothing and items I had in it, took me in the ER, told the nurse exactly what drugs I had taken, and then they got me on the stretcher. They turned around. The man was gone, just as if he vanished. So this was what I later find out again was the second intervention. I didn't listen to that one either. That person later on, now I refer to as Myris. Myris has become a friend of mine who apparently has been, I don't use the term guardian angel, but I will use the term as a friend that definitely has shown some interest in me and for a lot longer than I had ever imagined. And the third intervention, I don't know if you had any questions. Because I kind of ramble on.
Well, go ahead and finish this section of the third intervention, because I have thousands of questions, but I think we can finish this part and flow with that.
Well, the third intervention happened shortly after an attempt was done on my life, where I had a situation where after I had come across a document, which I still have, which was I'd got my hands on while I was working back with special operations with the Marine Corps and Naval Intelligence when I was involuntary recall, when I moved myself to Los Angeles. I was living in Pasadena, California at the time. And this document and some of the information I was finding out, I was questioning the two generals that I was working for, and apparently they didn't like that. And I had taken this document home. I don't know why I was doing this, because I was a soldier who followed orders. I have no idea why I was doing this. I was being completely insubordinate. I have no idea why. So what happened was they cut off my funding. My place that I was living was raided 3 times. The cops would not touch me with a 10-foot pole. There was even a couple times when I became belligerent in public just to see what would happen. And the cops would come, look at my ID, say, oh, I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. McComb, and they would leave. No public disturbance, no drunken disorderly, nothing. They wouldn't touch me with a 10-foot pole, which I later found out why. So let's just get back into it. So then I had finally had enough. I'm walking down the street. I'm in a hit and run. I find out later on that the hit and run was an attempt on me. And this is when I decided to seek my revenge out. And that's where the first interview came. And this third intervention didn't happen until later on, when, again, after, a lot of people don't know this, but it was maybe about a couple months after my first Project Camelot interview, I was in a bad way again, thinking to myself, why the heck am I doing this? I don't want to be a part of this. I just want to move out of the country, go move to a jungle somewhere, completely integrate with the local people, and I just want to have my own life. I want to try to have my own life. But what happened was one night when I had – and this is when I was still not quite well, and there was a few times, and I'm comfortable for being this now, where I'd go out and I would drink very heavily because I wanted to just forget everything. You know, certainly not something I'm proud of, but it's part of my past and it's part of who I am. So people need to know that. And during this time, I had gone outside, been screaming, yelling. And I woke up the next morning about 12 hours later. And this is when I was told that I had to do a deep saltwater submersion. I went and then I was trying to figure out if I really wanted to do this or not. And then someone who I knew just out of the blue sent me this 20-pound bag of pure, raw, natural Dead Sea salt and said, I think you need this. So I put some salt in a very hot bath. I got in the bathtub. And what happened there was absolutely incredible. I was in the bath for 4 hours. The water never cooled down. Now, before this, I couldn't take a shower for more than 2-3 minutes before my hair would start raising. I would start blacking out. I literally have joints in my knees and my shoulders pop out of place. Weird stuff that I still haven't been able to explain.
From contact with water?
I have a very unusual relationship with water, yes. I've had such people as Dave Corso, one of the original super soldiers, witness some things. Other people witness things. I did a demonstration in front of a speaking event where I can only describe to you as I took all the toxins out of the water by putting my hand over it. And I picked a few people out of the crowd to taste the water beforehand and then afterward. I didn't tell them what I was going to do. And people were absolutely shocked, I guess you could say, about what I did. I know I'm kind of jumping here and there, but so basically this last time when I was in this water, I left my body. I was taken out of body. And when this happens, my physical body, or as they call it, the skin suit, was put into kind of a suspended animation. And I was taken out to a place I can only describe as being in space. I felt like I was in this big glass dome looking at these planets and star systems and everything. Colors within colors that you couldn't even begin to, I couldn't even begin to describe to you. Just colors within colors that are not in the normal color spectrum. And that's when they went back to sharing with me what happened in the summer of 2005 when I did the unauthorized jump. And that's when they started telling me about the one essential thing that I needed to know and understand if I was going to continue on, and that I was to freely express this when I was ready, which hasn't happened till recently with everybody, and that I was to allow everyone to let it resonate within themselves. And that is what, in just my opinion, I feel is the most important thing for the human race to understand about themselves in order to unlock everything within them. And that is the free will spectrum and the emotional spectrum, which are two separate entities that cannot survive without the other, that have a direct effect upon your physical and your psychic DNA. And that is the short version of it.
The free will spectrum and the emotional spectrum, both autonomous and interdependent. Did I catch that?
That's correct, yes.
And how – free will is one of those terms that needs defining. Perhaps you could elaborate for us about that, because I think we are all clearly at a time where we're questioning, well, what is free? You know, what does that mean, free will? We can't even grow our own food sometimes. You know what I mean? What does free will mean?
Free will is a very in-depth subject, but let me just give you the basic. I'm actually going to be on a show in March for 2 hours doing nothing but talking about this.
Okay, great.
Because I asked the radio show host, he's a friend of mine, they want me to talk about it. I said, well, if you want me to explain this in depth, I'm going to need 2 hours.
Yeah.
So basically, okay, you know how when you shine a light through a prism, you get the spectrum of light from deep violet all the way up to, I don't remember the end of the spectrum. I believe it's like red or
red,
blue, mm-hmm. or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Red, and then it all becomes white.
Yes. Now imagine the free will spectrum, and we'll just cover that one first. Imagine that is a spectrum like that.
Mm.
On one extreme side is what was best described to me. It's the best way I can describe it is absolute slavery, subservient, absolute mind control slavery. You are not of your own mind, body, or spirit. You are nothing more than a drone that goes through your day in complete autopilot. And all of your thoughts are thoughts that have been given to you by others who have stated that this is how you should think, this is how you should eat, this is how you should walk, this is how you should pray, this is who you should worship, these are the clothes you should wear, and so on and so forth. So that is the absolute worst case scenario. That is the dark side of the spectrum. Now let's go to the other side of the spectrum. Pure light and pure freedom. This is the quintessential, this is the essence of being your own person in control of your own mind, body, soul. You are in control of your past, present, and future, which you can change based on things that you do by the minute. It goes along with the butterfly effect, where the butterfly flaps its wings off the coast of Madrid, and next thing you know, there's a hurricane off of the coast of Venezuela. So this is where you cannot be mind controlled at all. Anything that is told to you by someone else, even if it's a close friend, your mind automatically goes into a mode where you're dissecting it and you're finding the points that resonate with you. And anything that may not be conducive to what you are, good or bad, you put that on the back burner for later on. You don't necessarily throw it out. You keep it on the back burner. Now, between that spectrum is everything in between. So perhaps you're a passive aggressive person. You're an active aggressor. These are just different terms are used. I'm going based on like law enforcement, with my military side. Perhaps in one side of your life, for example, you refuse to watch mainstream media news because you know it's garbage. Yet you go to McDonald's and subject your body to aspartame and melamine and MSG and all the other toxins in there. Okay, so there's many different levels in that spectrum.
Well, it's interesting that slavery is actually, to be a slave is actually in the free will spectrum. That's would previously be an oxymoron in content.
Well, you know, for people listening, let me explain. Obviously, there is a history of people who are slaves, who have been slaves, such as what happened in early America. The Romans had slaves, pretty much every civilization, the Egyptians. I don't mean, if a person is captured or is born into slavery, obviously that's not their fault. However, they have the option, even if it means death and they have to ascend, they have that option. What I mean by slavery is by not free will. Now, let me explain that in a second. In modern culture, just imagine you have a man and a woman. They meet, they fall in love. The man and the woman are awake. They know that fast food is not good for you. They know there's fluoride in the water. They know that there's chemtrails. Let's say the woman is naturally or has developed to be a good remote viewer. And let's say the man can do telekinesis. The chances that they're born, their child or children are going to be able to do these same things. And they are going to be raised to know how to do these things. And they're going to be already an awoken soul. Now, you have the very unfortunate side of things where you have a man and a woman who are completely mind controlled because of all the things that have been subjected to humans in modern day society. Mm. Mind control, in a way, is actually genetically passed on. So what that means is that their child is naturally going to be, unfortunately, more prone to being mind controlled because those parents are going to buy them all the violent video games. They're going to stuff them with fast food. They're going to give them all these toys. They're going to let them drink out of plastics that's got bifenoprofol in it. It's unfortunate, but it happens. So in a way, that child is a slave because of means that is not under their – they weren't taken, okay? They don't know the difference. They don't know any better because they were born into that.
Right, right. So the part of you that's choosing is what part of you?
Well, in order to explain that, we have to get into the emotional spectrum because remember, the free will spectrum cannot survive alone without the emotional spectrum.
Okay.
And then just to go back a second with the free will spectrum. Now, I'm not saying that a person isn't totally free. They don't have to be a slave to be totally free. What I'm saying is, and this is where it gets a little complicated, so please bear with me. What's important is for a person to, at the very least, have a basic understanding of the entire spectrum, from complete mind-controlled slavery to absolute enlightened free will. I'm not saying that they have to be a slave. I'm not saying that they have to be mind controlled. What I'm saying is that they have to be understanding of it. So quick example, you have a person that may be enlightened. They look at someone that's mind controlled and, you know, I understand the aggravation because I get aggravated and they say, oh, that sheeple, you know, darn them for being a mind controlled idiot or whatever they want to say. Well, okay, we're only human. It's natural for people to get angry. However, step back after you say that and go, you know what? I really do feel bad for that person because they just don't understand. So then understand it and utilize that within your spectrum to be able to assist others in awakening. It's not just part of you, but it's a tool that you can use.
Well, then compassion, right? The emotion, the step back and you feel something, to acknowledge you feel something.
Yeah, and you know, this isn't something that happens in a day. You had asked me earlier. I spent probably the first 3 to 4 years, really, hasn't been since the past year that I've actually began to understand emotion. I used to spend hours, literally day after day, going to coffee shops, shopping centers, parks, and I would go sit, and I was actually observing people. I was observing couples holding hands. I was observing families. I was observing people getting into arguments and it taking mental notes because I didn't understand emotion, and I was trying to mimic it to integrate so I could survive so that I wouldn't stick out. And this was what I was doing.
Your story is the whole gamut, from going from that place where you literally lived that, you know, mind, body, and even your soul to some degree, in that do what you're told, feel nothing. Yeah. And then the feelings started to happen and your friends stepped in to hold you like, you know, it was
already. It was kind of an intergalactic swift kick in the rear is the only way I can say it. And I needed 3 of them in order to get it because I am pretty stubborn even to this day. I mean, my wife will – yeah, my wife who's sitting next to me can vouch for that one. But
pretty stubborn? You don't think that being mind controlled from when you were an infant had something to do with it, Fred?
Oh,
yeah. There's some.
I've discovered that there's a long line of stubbornness within my bloodline on both sides. So I would say some of it's inherited. Yeah. Let me get into the emotional spectrum side, and I'll try to be quick because I know we only have limited time.
We're doing 15 minutes.
Okay, so real quickly, the emotional spectrum, and you know, I wish I could show like charts with this, and maybe one day I'll make some and put them online or something. I'm not very good, but that's my wife is good with all that Photoshop stuff. Anyways, so the emotional spectrum is again on the other side. And before I say that, the emotional spectrum and the free will spectrum run parallel with each other.
Huh.
They both run parallel. They don't run perpendicular. They run parallel. So when I mentioned the absolute side of mind control, slavery, whatever you want to call it, where that begins, or you could say ends, depending on which way you look at it, is where the side of the emotional spectrum begins or ends, depending on which way you look at it. And that is complete loathing, complete hate, complete. That is the absolute darkest, deepest, evil side that everyone has the potential of having, which is true. It's unfortunate, but it's true. Everyone has that potential of getting that side. I've seen people who were absolutely innocent bring out the worst in them through the work I used to do. So you have absolute hate. And again, like the free will spectrum, you don't necessarily have to have ever lived in there or even have experienced it. Of course, most people, at least at the bare minimum, experience anger. So most people have at least an understanding of that part. And then it goes all the way up to pure love, absolute pure love of everything. And then, of course, there's all the emotions within that of depression, joy, sorrow, laughter, which is even its own emotion itself, denial, whatever. So once a person has completely, and I can't tell someone when they've reached this point. It's something where you just know. But once you've gotten to the point where you understand, appreciate, and use this spectrum, certain things will start happening. And this is absolute. I say this with complete confidence and knowing that you will find that certain things will start taking place with you. Your physical DNA will actually start repairing itself. Now, of course, you do have to eat correctly. You don't drink because you have to be healthy too. You can't just say, well, I understand the free will emotional spectrum, so yay, I can eat whatever garbage I want and I'll be okay. No, that's not the case. But once this happens, people who may have slightly blurry vision but don't need corrective lenses will notice that their vision will start getting better. Your skin will start feeling better. You'll start breathing better. All physical change will happen. And on top of that, we all have what's known as psychic DNA. It's a DNA of frequency, of energy, that the focal point resides within the pineal gland, but it actually goes much higher than that. And that's when you're talking about like the chakras. But it is no more different because, again, remember I talked about the two parents, one remote viewer, one telekinesis? That is actually inherited to the genetics of the psychic DNA, as is the physical DNA. So two parents with these abilities, that child, let's say they have two children. One may be, let's say, the boy picks up the gene, the psychic DNA gene of being able to do remote viewing from the mother. And let's say the daughter gets the telekinesis from the father or vice versa. So then what you will find is, let's say a person is a very good Reiki master and they're enlightened, whatever, but they haven't completely embraced the emotional spectrum and the free will spectrum. Once they do this, they may find, holy cow, I'm not just Reiki. Suddenly I'm doing remote viewing or bi-location remote viewing or whatever the case may be, telepathy or lucid dreaming better, astral projection, whatever you want to call it. And so that is the, there's a lot that's even hard for me to put in the words, but this is what was downloaded into me. This is what was shared with me before my eyes in so many different ways back in June or July or whenever it was, 2005. And so much more of about me and other things. It was kind of like a massive, it wasn't all download, but it was definitely, you know, when you go to like the observatories where they have the lasers and the planets and everything, you're in the big dome.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like sitting in an observatory where I was just sitting back and watching all these things shown to me.
Hmm. Well, you know what's interesting to me when you're saying that, I was seeing the infinity symbol, the one intimately connected to the other, and then both embracing and flowing into each other. And then in the center of the infinity, I've been really working with the infinity symbol, is consciousness. That's the part of you. What part of you is going to check into this understanding? What part of you is going to do that? If it's not consciousness, then what is it? You know? So in your experience of being with your friends, and this spectrum is really beautiful because it really is timely. Obviously, you are, what, in your early 30s now?
Yeah, I'm 32 now.
And now what you're bringing to us and what we're coming of age to realize is that we actually can make a difference for ourselves by using these tools. And how can you share with us how you've been able to integrate your understanding of this and how it's we're at the last of our hour, but how in your under have you integrated this from your own experience? How has that manifest for you?
It's been a very long process, and I want people to understand that this isn't necessarily something that happens overnight. I was a hard shell to crack, so you know, it probably took me a little longer than may take some. But that is something that's a very good question. That's really hard to answer. And hopefully in time I can give a better answer, but basically just imagine integrating yourself into the universal conscious, or here on earth, the collective consciousness. We are getting a little bit of assistance, and that is this conscious wave that such people as Dr. Brooks Agnew and others talk about, that's already hitting the Earth, but NASA and JPL call it a magnetic anomaly. It's coming from the center of the galaxy. But this vibration, this frequency, which is actually causing physical changes of every planet in the solar system, and especially the planet right now, mm-hmm. we will be reaching the climax of it sometime within the next several years. I don't make predictions. I don't give exact dates, but I know we're looking at it within the next several years. This is nothing more than a push. It's kind of like adding a little bit of fuel, but it's not going to help you all the way. So I apologize for not being able to explain it better, because this is still something that's very complicated for me to explain. It's all in my head. I can see it in my head clearly, but to get it out in the words, there seems to be a loss of translation, because what was expressed to me, quote unquote, verbally, is not exactly completely easy to translate with any language on this planet. All I can say, my best advice to people is this: expand your mind as much as possible. Try to learn something new every day. If you get angry, that is fine. In fact, if you don't get angry, I would worry about yourself. Because a little bit of anger is good, because you can take that anger, you can transform it into positive energy and project it forward. The other thing that I really advise people is to a little bit of stress in your life is good, because a little bit of stress in your life keeps your wits. All these things are ingredients into becoming completely integrated with your own free will and emotional spectrum. And then I guess lastly, I would say to this is, oh gosh, I just lost my train of thought. And that happens a lot. The last thing I would say is, this is it. I'm sorry. I'll be real quick. Not to badmouth anything, but there has been some misconceptions put out in the past number of years about the universal law of attraction. The universal law of attraction requires two steps. One, project and focus on your intent, and then daily doing something physically positive. You have to do both and be grateful for doing that. Like my wife just reminded me, thank you, honey. Do that, and I guarantee you, you will start bringing out and start developing and start understanding this emotional free will spectrum. Once this happens, you will become impervious to mind control. And as my wife just said, which reminded me again, thank you, honey, is that you have to be grateful for what you have today.
Well, you're a walking example of how these processes can and do transform us.
They do
so,
work.
And I am so grateful that you have lived to tell your tale and that you are with us in bringing the new world into being. And we are really close to the hour here. I really thank you for taking time to share with us this important message. And would you like to take the last few minutes to offer your website, upcoming events, things like this to the listeners?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if people want to keep up with what I do, I cover a wide base of information on the website that really my wife and I can work on together. It's truthsurvival.com. We cover all kinds of information, too much to talk about right now, but I also have in there my upcoming interviews, stuff on survival, a bunch of information. Tonight, actually, I'm going to be on a radio show, which is called the Church of Mabus. It's an East Coast show. It starts at 11 p.m. East Coast time. I have the information on the website. And then I have two speaking events coming up, one in March where I'm speaking at the Exopolitics Mexico Expo in Tijuana, Mexico. And then the next speaking event after that's in Philadelphia, the Free Your Mind Conference, which is April 9th and 10th. I have all that information on the website. And I just want to say thank you very, very much for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Aaron. And thank you. There's so many things in your story that we, of course, didn't get to, but I hope that we all can discover our humanity more and more just by listening to each other and making room for each other to transform and share our truths. And so thank you for your courage, for the guts that you have to come out. And listeners as well for joining us. We are going to sign out here. I hope you all have a lovely fortnight. Take good care of yourself and take good care of each other. I'm Jamil Graham, your host at Alchemy of Light. Do take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jamil.